All Quebecers, we must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to Urban Indigenous Radio. On tonight's show, we're playing the first hour of the latest episode of the Red Nation podcast entitled Settlers Gone Wild, Capitol Hill Edition. To listen to the rest of the episode, head over to theRedNation.org. As a content warning, this episode contains coarse language.
Let's go.
All right, so this is Power Hour in the brand new year of 2021.
It is not the new year. It's December 38th.
Yeah, it's December
38th. This is Red Power Hour. Oh, we're keeping all of this. We are keeping all of this. All right.
This is the Red Nation podcast with your host, Nick Estes, and we have some amazing news to announce for the year 2021. Red Nation podcast has been, you know, variously co-hosted or guest hosted by Red Nation comrades, but this year we're actually inviting our comrade Jen Marley onto the show as a permanent co-host.
Woohoo!
So she's joining us today in this run on the Q Shaman, and it's all dedicated to the Q Shaman.
Q Sauvage.
Yeah, Q Sauvage.
Q Sauvage.
Q the Sauvage, the Dior Sauvage commercial.
Lawrence of QAnonia.
Yeah, QAnonia.
Lawrence of QAnonia. Oh, shit.
Dances with Qs. All right. Jen Marley, who are you? Where do you come from?
Why are you here?
And why are you here?
Show us your papers.
Yeah, show us your papers. Storm in the podcast, like.
Wait, did you introduce me?
Oh, yeah. Cena's on here, too.
Good. Rude.
Why is this guy here?
Who the fuck is me? Okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah, wait your turn. Wait your turn.
Lord. Okay. First of all, I Jen, just this kind of fully.
The floor is yours, dog.
This is good.
2021 is off to a bad start.
Okay, yeah. I'm Jen Marley. I'm from the Pueblo of San Ildefonso. I'm Tewa. My grandma's from Zia Pueblo, so I also got my roots there, too. I am a student. I'm in the PhD program at the University of New Mexico in the American Studies Department. Nick just so happens to be my advisor. And
nepotism.
Yeah. I don't think that counts as not related. It's weird.
It's not nepotism. You're not related by blood. Just kidding. No.
Yeah. I think it's called favoritism. Probably gonna get fired for that.
Oh no.
What do you study, Jen? Want to tell us a little bit about your dissertation, your work?
Well, I'm far from my dissertation, but my research interests include like queer indigenous studies, indigenous feminisms, third world feminisms, internationalism, you know, environmental studies. And I'm especially interested in looking at gender. I consider myself as belonging to the traditions of indigenous feminism. I'm a co-founder of the Pueblo Feminist Caucus of the Red Nation. I feel that this you know, my project like definitely transcends the academy, and I'm interested in rethinking kinship and identity within Pueblo communities and beyond. And I'm also just, you know, interested in looking at our relationships to the state and how identity has formed historically in the place that I'm from, but also looking at how we can learn to be internationalists, as, you know, we have been historically, and what possibilities exist for our liberation alongside, you know, engaging in broader anti-imperialist struggles. So it's not very precise yet. I'm still working on narrowing down exactly what I want to look at. But yeah, I hope I can contribute like useful theoretical frameworks to the realm of indigenous feminism, but also like I'm really just interested in like throwing down like in revolution, like dismantling nuclear colonialism, and, you know, laying some kind of foundation for people to do that very real hardcore work someday. So yup.
Sweet.
People probably know me or have seen me. People are probably most familiar with my my engagement in the
your arrest.
My arrest. I know. People just
when you
love
stormed
sharing
the New Mexico State Capitol.
Right. Palace of the Governors.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just love sharing like my arrest pics. And I'm like, if you're gonna share my arrest pics, you gotta share my nudes too. You gotta balance it out.
So that's a good segue into today's conversation. I was actually thinking about this because I was like, I didn't want to bring it up, but you brought it up, Jen.
There's no way around it, man. Yeah. I try.
So for example, like we're going to be talking about the QAnon, Q Shaman specifically, Mr. Jake Angeli. I think that's how you say his name.
Who cares?
Who cares? But.
Okay, and as well as in the banking cartels. So all over the globe, countries are occupied by central banking institutions that loan the government money at interest, and this enables them to own all the other socioeconomic and geopolitical gears in the country. Okay, and then what they do is they use their billions or trillions of dollars to create a bunch of deep underground bases where they have all this like highly top secret technology going on. Okay. And they are like figuring out how to do things like create infinite energy, or do things like anti-gravity technology or inertia propulsion. They're learning how to do things like cloning and all sorts of crazy stuff, okay? This is like a global takeover. They're trying to create a new world order, right? They're trying to create a one world government. That means there's like over 180 countries involved in all this stuff, where they're monopolizing all the resources, all the labor in the country through the central banking system, okay? And that enslaves the whole country through debt to whoever owns a central bank, all right? Now,
You know, this is in response to the storming of the Capitol by the Q people. They called it, I think it was called like the Great Awakening or part of the Great Awakening, to rescue Donald Trump from, you know, not getting his second inauguration or his second term as president of the United States. But what was fascinating about that, and I think a lot of indigenous people on Twitter and elsewhere noticed, that the police very gingerly either aided and abetted the QAnon MAGA people, or you know, didn't do what they do to us as indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, here locally in, you know, New Mexico, there's a very militant and homicidal militia movement, very much aligned with the fascist right that took power, or that attempted to sort of symbolically take power in the state.
They smeared shit on the walls.
Yeah.
It's a type of power.
Yeah.
I guess they pissed on the Senate floor too.
Did they really?
Yeah. Talk about savage.
Good old shit and piss.
Fucking savages.
But the, what's great, I mean, what's interesting here is that you had videos of these militia guys in Santa Fe, which is the state capital of New Mexico. It's also where the churches used to hang and fly on their flagpoles, Pueblo and Apache scalps. It's also where a lot of Pueblo and Apache people were sold into slavery. It's also, you know, just where the gallows were when they used to execute indigenous people. And so this is the state capital of New Mexico. It's also where on January 6th, the, you know, Cowboys for Trump and the militia movements went to the governor's mansion and actually openly threatened with guns and said they were going to kill Michelle Lujan Grissom. And nobody was arrested at all. And you were arrested for simply protesting a genocide parade in,
that is correct.
In Santa Fe. So maybe you can talk, we'll start local and then we'll go global. So maybe
there's no in between.
Maybe you could walk us through Santa Fe and the genocide parade that occurred there and like everything that's, you know, like the significance of armed white guys going to the Capitol and demanding, you know, a recount.
Sure. Santa Fe, God, gotta kill it with fire. Irredeemable, in my opinion.
For sure.
It's just like from its very inception has always been about like the reinforcement of like just violent settler colonialism and the perpetuation of racial capitalism. Today it's like New Mexico's art mecca and, you know, the celebrities have homes there. It's known for its, you know, famous art scene, and it's a place, it's particularly the Santa Fe Plaza, like where the roundhouse is, where the Palace of the Governors is, and, you know, all of the galleries are. It's just a site of like very just gruesome violence, as Nick mentioned, you know, the site of hangings, the site of battles. And I also want to mention, though, like Santa Fe, when I'm talking about Santa Fe, I'm talking about the settlement. What that place is called in the Tewa language historically is Ogapogeowinge, meaning the white shell water place, in reference to a hot spring shrine that existed where this gigantic cathedral now sits, a very standard of, you know, Spanish colonizers to build churches atop sacred sites. Santa Fe, like, is a white supremacist settlement to its core. And I'm honestly not surprised at what we saw at the Capitol the other day. I think particularly in the past few years, we've seen Santa Fe show its ugly face for what it is. It's often like celebrated as being so liberal and like gay friendly and like ecologically friendly, and, you know, a lot of new agers and go there and live there, so it has like, you know, big granola vibes. But of course, we all know what usually lies under that mask. So I think that storming and the lack of police response to it is something that doesn't surprise me. It's like very on brand for Santa Fe. Yeah, I mean, just a few months ago, you know, Native women were brutalized when after the toppling of the racist obelisk monument, which is actually a monument like celebrating Union soldiers occupying the area. And it's known for its inscription saying that the monument is to honor those killed by, you know, the Indian savages. And there's a whole history to that, but it's a monument that's been contested quite a bit throughout history, just like the Entrada, right? The genocide parade that I was arrested for protesting. That's been being protested since at least 1980, possibly even before that. But basically what it is similar to Civil War reenactments. It reenacts the reconquest of Santa Fe by Don Diego de Vargas, a brutal conquistador. It's said to have been a bloodless reconquest, which is a lie. At least 80 Pueblo revolutionaries were hung at the gallows. That was precisely in the spot where I was arrested and paraded. And, you know, to this day, these cops continue to wear the seal of de Vargas on their uniforms. Like, there's just these, you know, this very blatant connection to this ongoing legacy of just violent genociding of Native people there. And so it was abolished only after the optics of my arrest, because that, you know, that like struck a chord with a lot of people. And especially like these white liberals who want to believe that Santa Fe is like their pure progressive wonderland, which since then there's been, you know, multiple indigenous people brutalized and like publicly. And yeah, so Santa Fe, kill it with fire. It's not redeemable. Like, just, and people don't think of a place like Santa Fe as being like a violent border town, but it really is. You know, like I said, indigenous people aren't even allowed to exist in a place like the Plaza unless they're there selling their wares with permits and, you know, there to like upkeep, you know, this illusion that like, you know, we're these peaceful artisans, like there for your pleasure. So, I mean, I could go on and on about this. I don't want to take up too much time, but Santa Fe is white supremacist to its core, and it's really scary because I actually think the right has a foothold there right now. I think that in a place like Santa Fe, it's just like a perfect place for, you know, these far right movements to flourish. And I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. I think that's a good segue. Oh, and then I guess a segue to talking about the fucking QAnon shaman dude is like, Santa Fe historically has been like the space where, you know, like I said, the New Age movement has thrived, and like these ultra conservative and usually very rich white people will go to not only consume indigenous art and culture, but to take it up themselves in various ways. It's home to notoriously violent, like brave robbers and art collectors who, you know, are kind of seeking that to distance themselves from whiteness, but also maintain all of the power that comes with it. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Q Shaman himself has connects to a lot of these busters in Santa Fe.
Q Shaman? Shaman? How do you even say that?
Oh.
Is it Shaman?
Again, who cares? Yeah.
Well, all right.
Let's pronounce it several different ways.
So let's talk about the new interim president of the Confederate States of America. His name is Jake Angeli. I don't know. I think the Lima Group recognized him, and NATO recognized him as the interim president.
It's part of like the separatist movement.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get into this, because like, okay, let's start with this guy, because this guy is like now like meme gold for Indian country or Indian Twitter. So his name is Jake Angeli. There was a lot of questions about whether or not he was actually impersonating an indigenous person.
Of course he was. Mm-hmm. People thought he was impersonating Vikings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that kind of like pure white blood pedigree. And I'm like, nah, dog, he was dressed up like an Indian.
Yeah, he looks like one of the Indians from like a George Catlin, you know, painting. But also he's got like, let's just do a breakdown for those who may not have seen him and may not know who we're talking about. But it looks like he killed, he found a dog that was hit by a car and skinned it and then put it on his head.
Put some horns on it.
And put some horns on it, you know, put a bird on it. And then he's got like a beard, definitely a white guy. He's got like a
Star Wars tattoo.
Is that a Star Wars tattoo? No, that's not a Star Wars tattoo.
Okay, like so,
no. Yeah, so let me get into it, because this is the thing.
He has several tats.
Yeah, he's like a neo-paganist, but it's like related to this whole like white supremacist thing. So I'm going from the top down. So.
Okay. We started at his head.
Yeah, we started at his head.
Dead dog.
Horns. He's literally a white devil. he's got an earring. He's got like a, you know, you see a lot of, this is like a thing with a lot of white women. He's got like a beaded long, like feathery earring hanging off his right ear. He's got some kind of, I don't know, something you buy at Hot Topic, I think. It's like a medallion. It must be like a spell medallion or something. And then he's got a very hairy chest. So he's like, he's half bear. He probably smells like one too. No offense to our bear relatives.
I'd like to stand a point of odor on that one, or because that is not a hairy chest. You have never met an Iranian man, clearly. This is a white guy with some peach fuzz on his chest, but
compared to native, he's like a fucking full blown.
Wait, so natives don't have body hair? I didn't know this.
It's like a whole thing.
Really?
No, like native men can't even grow beards correctly.
God bless you people.
Yeah, not.
Even with my amount of white blood, I can't like.
Yeah, no, excessive hair is not a problem.
Hair on your head.
Oh, how did that happen?
I'm white enough to grow a beard.
Yeah, but you'll never find like a native man with back hair or like excessive nipple hair.
Hurts so much. Oh.
It's a thing. I mean, like,
or like their forearms look like fucking.
Oh man, I feel seen. There was,
like kittens.
Yeah. I mean, there is definitely hair. There's hair, but it's not extensive. It's
like patchy and sporadic in a very strange way, but it doesn't cover like large amounts of like body.
Yeah, there's not a lot of length. Surface area too.
Surface. That's the word.
The catfish mustache.
What?
Catfish mustache.
I actually really like Navajo men really like the catfish mustache, and I actually really don't like it.
Yeah.
I find it very creepy. It.
They're so proud of their little sparse mustaches.
So I tried to grow like actual facial hair, and I actually got disgusted with myself, and I just shaved because it's like it's so embarrassing.
Yeah, you don't want to look at it.
So embarrassing.
Wait, back to Mr. Jake, because this guy is 30. This guy is 33 years old.
Oh yeah, he's an adult.
He's a baby. Like he's like a little older graduate student. Like he's not. This guy is like their shaman.
Well, yeah, okay. Let's get into this.
Shaman.
First of all, he's got like a. Let's finish.
Keep talking about what he was wearing.
I know. No. Yeah, we're only at his nipples.
All right.
Only at his nipples.
We stopped at his nipples.
I was trying
hair.
To move us past this.
So it's funny because he's got tattoos, and we'll get into those tattoos in a bit. But he's got like a tattoo that's literally like constructed around his nipple. It's not a Star Wars sign. It looks like a rebel sign, but it's not. It's like some kind of weird Nordic thing, and I'll talk about it in a bit. And then further down, he's got like a Thor hammer, and then or a hammer Odin, and then he's got like he's wearing like I think he probably just went to like Walmart and bought like a Native American Halloween costume. And
no,
just...
it looks like he made those fucking pants.
Okay,
they don't even have fringe on them. They don't even have like a waist, do they? Is there like?
I think there's like they're elastic.
Oh shit!
So there's some.
Let me pull up this picture.
Yeah, there's some craft behind it.
Okay.
Definitely not indigenous, because I think the indigenous seamstresses and seamsters that I know would die if they saw that kind of craft.
Yeah, that would never fucking happen. Oh, here's a good.
But somebody had a really good description of it. They called it a Chewbacca bikini.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was Star Wars related.
Well, let's get into this. He's not like obvious. People were saying he's an anti-fascist. He's not. He's from Arizona, the good state of Arizona.
He had a spear, too.
Well, I'd rather be dead in California than alive in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's pretty much the breeding ground these days.
I mean, it was like the birthplace of neoliberalism, actually.
Yeah. He's a direct product of Barry Goldwater,
mm-hmm.
who actually also used to dress up like an Indian back in the day. As a matter of fact, Playing Indian by Philip DeLoria talks about it.
We will talk more about that on another episode of Yoded.
Yeah, we're going to get into secret societies and Native appropriation.
Well,
stay tuned.
I want to be a part of that. I have a freaking story. I have a firsthand account about that shit.
Oh, yeah.
Santa Fe has a lot of those.
Yep. I actually stayed in one. We used to live in one, actually.
The School for Advanced Research in Santa Fe. Those white sisters. Their last name was White, and they were white.
Yeah, and they used to do mock Pueblo rituals.
Yeah, like Aztec rituals.
Yeah, they used to dress up like Indians.
They used to dance around.
And this
circles.
Is what the messed up thing about it was, is that, you know, it's like this prestigious institution. And, you know, a lot of these people like are indigenous academics, but they just left those pictures out. They're just like, oh, it's cool. It's part of our history. Like, look at all these white people who used to play Indian and dance like Indians when dancing was actually illegal for us, you know. Like, it was pretty.
Well, it's the history of American anthropology.
And they also had a pet cemetery there, which is really disturbing.
My grandma and grandpa went to one of those things out of curiosity, and they loved to talk about it at cocktail parties, or they used to. And they just got the biggest fucking kick out of seeing that foolery, like, firsthand.
That's the way I feel, like, about 99.9% of Indigenous appropriation. It's freaking hilarious. Am I offended? Yeah, but I think it's better to laugh at it. And this is a perfect guy. So he's got tattoos. He's got Thor's hammer or Mjolnir, whatever. I don't know. I'm going to purposely butcher these European things. And an image of Yggdrasil, a tree of life, etched around his nipple. And then,
that is a tree of life.
And then placed right above his art is the Valknut. Mm-hmm. Real name. The knot of the sling. There's actually a nut story in here too. So
yep.
Stay tuned. We're putting Easter eggs.
Death by nuts.
Yes. Okay. We'll get into that. There was a casualty that involved getting electrocuted in the nuts at the Capitol building. It's a true story. So these, the Valknut is an Old Norse runic symbol, and it's very much popularized by white supremacists, you know. And so for those of you that don't know, back in the 90s, but also kind of like in the 80s as well. In the 90s specifically, white supremacists in Europe, especially like in the Nordic countries like Sweden and Norway, began to reappropriate what would be considered pagan culture. And it was really much integrated into like the black metal scene. And so you get like these black metal actually comes out of a form of Nazism and fascism. And they were like burning down churches because they saw like the Christians as like, you know, foreign invaders, et cetera. And that kind of culture has really permeated white supremacist culture in the United States and North America. And so that's where these symbols actually come from. He is appropriating a kind of form of like what would be considered like European primitivism, right? And the argument with them is that Europe is like, you know, there is a European nationality or European nationalities, and that Europeanness actually goes back to what we now know as paganism. And so, and they think of the North America as an extension of Europe in this sense, right? While also appropriating indigenous kind of iconography and imagery as well.
Hmm. So it's like a double play on the nativism.
Yeah.
It's really inherent to settler identity.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And there's something like to be said about the way that the left and like right-wing media pundits talk about like quote unquote tribalism. Because this mm-hmm. country was actually built to eradicate our tribalism, like fundamentally, to be kind of like have this like post-modern figure of like this kind of amalgamation of primitivity, right? Whether it's through the formation of like male masculine violence through fascist organizations like the Proud Boys or fucking Q Shaman. he's the apotheosis of Western culture.
Hell yeah.
Gotta love it.
They don't send their best, they send this guy.
Yes. He is their best.
So that's Q Shaman. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on this, because I think it's amazing that this guy's the leader. Like he's been like, even if he's not really the leader, he's the figurehead of
the MAGA
takeover.
It's just literally so on brand. Like it couldn't be more on brand. Like I was pretty yoded because I had just finished reading Playing Indian to write a final paper, and I'm like, damn, these guys are really with it. What it tells me is that they know their history, right? They know what it means to play Indian, you know, as a part of like engaging in these like white supremacists like patriotic movement. So why are we confused about that?
I
can't believe I just thought about this, but I remember there's this like a prominent voice, her name is Lila June Johnson. The white liberals really like her politics. She's a Navajo person, kind of in the radical politics kind of arena. But I remember this piece she wrote a few years ago about how white settlers need to find their own indigeneity and that that's like a really important political project for them. And so they actually need to like go back to Europe and like do what this guy, what's his name again?
It doesn't matter. It's Q.
Q Shaman.
It's Q Savage.
Q Savage. To do like to do what this guy has actually done. And I was thinking, I was like, dude, like if this is your recommendation for like what white settlers should do, like they accomplished it. This is the dream, yeah. Right? This is the dream right here of finding one's like white indigeneity. Because as Nick said, it's like it's an indigeneity that extends back. It's like a fictitional indigeneity, right? That draws from like European primitivism and then also like American or like a quote unquote new world kind of primitivism. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that people have written about, you know, the way that playing Indian, of course, Phil DeLoria's book is foundational for this, that playing Indian is like a foundational aspect of the American experience. It's like settlers, it's particularly white settler men, form kinship with each other through playing Indian. And this is like well documented. It still happens in places like Santa Fe.
Boy Scout culture.
So what we saw on Wednesday in this Q Savage dude, like being like the literally like the icon, right? The icon of this particular watershed historic moment and this fascist movement. Like the fact that this dude is in red face is like, this is America. Like if you want to understand settler colonialism, you literally just have to look at this guy. It's not an aberration that he's wearing this outfit and that he is playing Indian. This is literally like the culmination of white supremacy, which is partially like largely based on anti-Indianism. So yeah, not shocking at all.
So somebody actually did his ancestry and he apparently did a DNA test and it came back that he's related to Elizabeth Warren.
I was waiting. I was like, what's he gonna say? This isn't real. This is totally a setup. I've listened to enough hours of this guy's voice to know how he jokes. It's also think of the perversity of all this. Remember, like, okay, so white settlers inherited and this incredible kind of almost sort of historical genetic like genome of the U.S. in the terms of like the nation state of the US, which is white supremacy, imperialism, eradicating the indigenous people, right? Like these are foundational things of US culture, right? But then the problem is like the nationalism of like the nationalism requires a kind of rootedness. But when you know that you only showed up here like 300 years ago, and then you look around to like, you know, the other fascists in the room, they're like, oh, Germans have 2,000 years of history. They can talk about that. But like, so then they have to do this thing of, well, we are something called European. And like the whole idea of Europe then itself becomes this new fiction, right? So they went from, it's like they're riding two sort of invisible imaginative horses at once. One is called like the American National Project. And the other one is something like even phonier called Europe. Right? Like it's like you know what I mean? Like if you look at the map, there's only like one, there's like three, like there's only like that many continents. Like we think of Europe, Asia, Africa, like as separate continents, but like these are like, this is a huge landmass, and our borders that we drive or that we draw around them, those are mental borders always, right? Like those are like, sure, there are real peoples of say Ukraine and Germany and whatever, like there are cultures and languages and foods and whatever. But like the idea of Europeanness is incredibly new, incredibly shaky. And who believes in Europe? Fucking crazies like Lauren Southern who go out into the middle of Mediterranean to like harass like, you know, undocumented people out of like fleeing their land. Like these are the degenerates of Europe. The rest of them, like nobody believes in Europe as a project. The UK just left Europe. Like they didn't even want to be part of the club they helped found. Like what does that, like, where do we stand? But that kind of critical faculty, I mean, it escapes these people. What these people have is this kind of revanchist, dream of returning to this, you know, like totally fictional image of America as this perfect sort of whole place. And this, you know, demonic, illiterate bag of McDonald's grease embodies that for them, right? And the fact that he lost means they all lost. So, of course, he couldn't have lost. Therefore, you have to go and fight this sort of fictional thing. And then it turns into this, like, and then the cops let you into the Capitol building. I mean, like, this is the perfect end to the Trump thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. I was in America when he was elected. I watched the election with almost like kind of glee, because when it happened, I felt this smug sense of good. Let them see what they are. Let them learn what I know what the United States is, what a lot of the rest of the earth knows what the United States is. So like in a weird way, the strange devotion of this like just toilet brain soul with like nothing to offer. Like this is actually like what you said, Melanie, is right. Like this is America.
This is America.
Like ironically, they actually are the red, white, and blue. Like, mm-hmm. like
his face is painted. Yeah, his red, white, and blue war paint on his face.
Like in a bad way, like they showed themselves for what they are. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is all that you have. Like some clown prince screaming on Twitter. And then, you know, I mean, what we didn't talk about is the fact that right afterwards he threw them all under a bus. He hasn't been heard from since. Anyways, that's my rant. I'm going to stop. That was way too long.
So this man was arrested just hours ago. What I'm reading.
Yeah, today we're recording on Saturday.
Did he have a shirt on?
Yeah, did he have his... That's the good question. That's
they
the number
him out
one question.
Sweat. Question.
Yeah.
In Sedona.
Yeah, he was in Sedona.
He was in one of those sweats where a bunch of like white folks die. He was in a construction.
No, but I think like what you're onto something, Sina, and this is something that I wanted to get into as well, is because there's been a lot of chit chat about this. But he represents, and this like return to primitivity or primitivism, like whether it's like an imagined Europe or an imagined, you know, America, is like the quintessential move to settler innocence, right?
Right.
To create like all, like even like, you know, immediately after this whole incident happened, you had Mark Wayne Mullen, who's actually a Cherokee congressperson. I just tweeted out what he said, and I got a lot of backlash from Cherokee people, and rightfully so, because they're like, we don't own him. He's like, you know, he's a piece of shit. He's a racist asshole. And he is. But he is one of six, and there are three conservatives. Like, this is the thing. Oh, yeah, representation of indigenous people. Three of them are right-wingers who were on board with the Stop This Deal campaign. Like, let's be honest, that is what, you know, representation does not mean red power. Representation does not mean indigenous power. But anyways, he was, you know, there's a picture of him, and he said that, you know, he did this interview with NBC, and he said that, you know, oh, I'm a, you know, I remembered my training. I think he was, you know, he served in the military, and he was like, I was making sure everybody was out, you know, out of the floor. And then they flashed a picture of him, and he was like literally cowering behind a chair the entire time. But anyways, he was like, he said, you know, the interviewer asked them, you know, point blank, and this is on live television, she's like, you know, Trump just got on television and said, and you know, with a pre-recorded message, and said to all these people, I love you, you know, but please stop and go home. I don't think Trump actually threw them under the bus, but Mark
later
Wayne Mullen,
he did, though, in his tweet he did, oh, in his his begging to keep his account, which didn't even work.
His last tweet. The series finale of
so,
Trump Twitter.
Mark Wayne Mullen, an indigenous person, ostensibly, you know, said, I love these guys too. Didn't qualify it by anything. You know, this is the Blue Lives Matter people that ended up killing a cop with a fire extinguisher. Yeah, this guy got hit in the head with a fire extinguisher and died. There was Ashley Bitten.
Baggins. Baggins.
of which shire we don't know.
Fucking demon shire of hell.
I have the whole list of the people who died.
I don't have like the good use of adjectives the way that the English lit guy does.
The comp lit guy on the call. Yeah, I know, he's like the toilet bowl of American ideology or whatever.
It was so much better.
So there was Ashley Babbitt, who was a small business owner, by the way. She sold, pool supplies, cleaning supplies out. And she was also a veteran, but also a wild Q follower. There was Benjamin Phillips, upper middle class computer programmer. And I don't really know. He had a stroke and died, I guess. Then there's Kevin Grissom, who who this is the best one. Apparently, allegedly, according to sources familiar with his death.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. He was a 55-year-old man from Athens, Alabama, and he died of an apparent heart attack. And they say at an unknown point during the events, but according to eyewitnesses who posted on Twitter, apparently he had stolen something, a picture from the wall, and somehow in the course of like bumbling around, he's a large man. Of course, bumbling around, I'm sure he had a hard time grabbing this picture. It slipped and triggered the taser that he had on his Batman utility belt or in his pocket. Not quite sure which one that is. You know, he seems like a very tactically minded person, judging by the pictures of him holding machine guns and you know, with American flags.
It's like double fisting machine guns.
Yeah, he's double fisting machine guns in front of a Christmas tree in one of the photos. Suffered from high blood pressure, by the way, so he's probably really worked up at this moment in time. And
then he tased himself.
He tased himself in the balls, in the crotch. Balls. And caused himself to have a heart attack and died. He literally electrocuted his goblin coin purse, to use the language of a complet scholar. And died death by goblin coin purse.
I mean, he must have been tasing himself for a pretty extended period of time to go into cardiac arrest.
Pretty rowdy.
So according, but this is the best.
These people are like not well to begin with, generally, right? Like this is not the healthiest of countries, like the U.S. So like, I mean, like, think about it. Like, all these unhealthy people flying across the country, including the Babbitt. I mean, Babbitt looked quasi-healthy, so she wasn't one of them. But I mean, she was in the military. That tells you. But, the like, that flying across the country, endangering yourself with this, like, terrible disease, endangering everyone around you. God knows how many people are going to get COVID and die from that event.
Right.
And then to go there, and that's how your life ends. Like that's
America.
This
is America. But
it wasn't even like that they met resistance. Like they were allowed into that place. Like they didn't have to face any resistance. So like in a way I feel sorry for the Babbitt woman, like because like it was all choreographed until they got like how far? What difference has it made if she went through another door? You know what I mean? Like and she died. Like she got a bullet through the neck and she died. Like that's like that like imagine you're her parents or something. Like what did your child die for? You're like, oh, for like
QAnon
Twitter guy. Like
yeah,
like that's like that is like a deep tragedy. You know what I mean? Like as sick and depraved as these people are, and like as much as we're laughing, but like some people give up their lives on purpose to like achieve something. You know, like it's not like I mean, remember the thing that Bill Maher, the one honest thing that Bill Maher said in his whole life was defending the idea that you shouldn't call the Al-Qaeda like 9/11 guys cowards because they gave up themselves, like they gave up their lives for what they believed in. Like we're the cowards. We're the ones who bombed from above. He said this. And then, of course, it was a huge pushback and it's been conveniently forgotten. And he's back to being the Islamophobe we all know him to be. But like the idea that like the people who die for their cause, like this is in some cultures, in some places, like, you know, this is something highly valued. But there has to be a reason. Like, there has to be a good reason. Something good has to come of it, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a temper tantrum caused by Twitter that then, like, caused on Twitter about some stupid guy's Twitter account. Like this is, this is the tragedy. Like, this is what you gave up your life for? Like, you could have cleaned pools. You could have, you know, like, you could have, like, made your life have meaning of some kind. But that's the thing, when you don't have any politics in your life, when all you have is culture war, and then the like the hero of that culture war faces some kind of turmoil or sends out, you go to him, like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, like this is what you died for? Like for a guy who laughs at you? Like he hates his followers. He hates them. I mean, the funny thing about him saying, I love you, Like, he does not say that to his kids. That motherfucker does not say that to his kids, and they all vie for his love. Maybe he says it to Ivanka, but for all the wrong reasons. But he literally does not say, I love you. And like, there he is telling these other people who probably didn't get told, probably didn't get told as well enough times that somebody loved them. Or like, you know what I mean? Like, that is like this weird, strange thing at the heart of all of this. Like people doing these drastic things for absolutely no reason. And on top of that, for a guy who hates them, that's the turning point here. I don't think the actual events, the symbolism of all these idiots walking into the Capitol building, because that will just like never happen again, right? This will be their excuse that to have 50,000 troops stationed at every single Capitol event, probably daily, is probably going to do what like the French government did with like the Eiffel Tower and just have like a permanent military presence there. It's surprising that that's not the case, right? So like the actual historicity of this is to me not that interesting, but the fact that like this person died, like five people died. Like, I shouldn't laugh, but like just saying it out loud is like five people died for this, for like what is essentially like this, is like a frat party gone horrible.
I don't know, but
yeah, no, but it was, but they died for fascism though. They died for like state power. Like they really had a reason. Like, and
they would have killed us. If we were there, they would have like
they wanted to kill.
There was no battle though. Like there was
they
nothing,
wanted to kill people
to
in Congress.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean
something that I've been thinking about is like they, with the exception of Ashley Babbitt and the cop that got bashed with the fire extinguisher, they literally killed themselves.
That's true.
They killed themselves. Like that one woman got trampled, like the fucking taser, like people are falling off of shit and dying of like so-called natural causes, but like they killed themselves. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I think, you know, I get what you're saying, Cena, but like I guess my perception of it is like these are like, and I use brainwashed in a way that like, in a way that I understand the implications of this. I'm not using it in a conspiracy minded way. But these people were to the point, somebody like Ashley Babbitt, who knew, I don't know if she ever saw combat in her, I mean, she was I looked at her military records and she was in like, you know, she was in all the places that the United States government was in Afghanistan. She was even in the Persian Gulf for a while. So she knew like the dangers of things, and she knew all of those things, you know, and she like really believed that her, like, whatever, in, you know, the ideology was so strong in her, right? The force was so strong in her that yeah, she like took bullets for it. And I would say that like, had she, you know, like being in the streets here during the uprising last summer and seeing the fascists, the people she was rolling with, actually shoot people to try to fucking kill them, I believe that she would have stood by them. Because the same people who stood by the fascist who like shot my friend were the same kinds of people like Ashley Babbitt. Mm-hmm. And they actually like would post our home addresses, you know, our pictures on the internet, and like call for our lynching and our hangings and like basically modern day scalp bounties. Like these people like are out for a murderous, genocidal kind of like program. And I think it's one, you know, and I saw a lot, and this gets into a whole nother thing, but like the element of fascism in this is like, yeah, it was like, and I agree, it was symbolic. There wasn't really anything like, what are they going to do? I mean, besides like wipe, smear their feces and urinate on the Senate floor, you know, what are they actually going to do? Like there wasn't really a plan, but nonetheless, it was like a huge victory for them. They like, there's relative impunity. I mean, yeah, they're going to go after, like, you know, they're going to humiliate the people who died. Like, look at these, you know, these clowns that died for this cause. They're going to probably arrest, you know, they arrested Q Savage, but none of the people who orchestrated this, all the senators, the right-wing senators, all the wealthy talk show right-wing hosts, none of them are going to go, you know, down for this. They're going to get some low-level guys, amp up some anti-terrorism laws that are eventually going to be used against the left. right? And that's what's really concerning for me, is that it's, you know, there is only a tangible gain for the right in this, you know, and they're already calling for a January 7th armed mobilization in Washington.
Well, I mean, didn't that New York Times article come out, was it yesterday, that the RNC met on, yesterday, and they all applauded Trump. Like, yep. They were totally fine with what happened on Wednesday. And I think that people calling them like insurrectionists and extremists and like clowns, I mean, they are clowns. They look like clowns. Like, the Trump outfit is a clown outfit, but that's not the extreme right of the Republican Party. This like is the Republican Party. And I would say that the Democrats today are probably like the Republicans of the 80s and the 90s. And so you have neoliberalism. So the two parties that have state power, right, are just standard neoliberals, right? Like, Biden's just going to be like an austerity president, and like warmongers, you know, like imperialists, and then like fascists. So these are the two things. These are the two things. They both have state power, right? They have the whole monopoly of violence and the mechanisms of the state behind them. So for me, it's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this situation, right? Because we don't have state power. We don't even have a movement right here on the left. But there's a couple of things I wanted to say and move back to. You know, Sina, I appreciate your response to the deaths of these five people. Like, we're joking, but it's also like very tragic, I guess. And the reason why I'm saying this is I made this comment, and this is why I was targeted by fascists this summer in the media, why they tried to dox us. Well, they did dox us and tried to come to our house. It was because I was like, don't humanize fascism. Like, the ideology of victimhood, like the idea that these people are victims of Trump, is total bullshit, because fascism is an ideology of victimhood. These people already see themselves as victims of like George Soros, or victims of the racist conspiracy theories, right? Like, the victimhood and like the idea that everyone is an enemy who is not a part of their like group, which is like a white, usually like white petty bourgeois or bourgeois like people, right? These groups. And so this ideology of victimhood is already like ingrained in how they see themselves. And I'm going to use the word kinship, the way that they relate to each other. And so I don't think any of them have any problem becoming actual victims or like casualties of the cause, because the ideology, like fascism, yes, like they have state power. Nick reminded me of this in the United States, but fascists are literally like almost purely ideologically driven. It's an ideology. It's actually like neoliberal trauma politics, but the right wing version of it. The left wing has its own version of it, the healing stuff, but the right wing and the identity politics stuff. But the right wing has turned neoliberal trauma politics into this politics of injury that has now grown into, I think, a really vibrant fascist movement. And so for them, like they're a victim of settler colonialism, right? Because they don't actually belong here. This is why they have to claim indigeneity. That's why they have to remind us all the time that they're native to this place, because they're not. They don't fucking belong here. And the only way that they maintain control is through violence, like various types of violence. And so the toppling of statues, you know, indigenous people coming out and supporting Black Lives Matter this summer, the taking down of Columbus statues, the retiring of racist holidays, like what Jen did a few years ago in Santa Fe, like they feel imperiled, right? This sense of entitlement they have to the land that is central to settler ontology. They feel victimized, right, by this turning tide of history. And this is partly why you see, I think, this expression. And then for Tatanka guy or Q Savage, right? Right. That's why he's the fucking icon of contemporary fascism, like settler fascism in the United States. It's literally like, you guys knocked down statues this summer. Like, you all came out through on Indigenous Peoples Day and you did all these things. Like, you've been trying to retire holidays. Well, guess fucking what? I stormed the Capitol dressed up as an Indian.
Yeah.
It was,
and
like,
got away with it.
And I fucking got away with it. Like, fuck you, Indians. Like, seriously, that's
and,
also
and
what it represented to me.
One of the guys actually stole a riot shield, which Nick Tilson from Indian Collective is facing 17 years in prison for. And the guy who stole the riot shield was actually dressed like an Indian.
Yep.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, these people have... Don't get me wrong. I am not, like, sitting here like, these people are redeemable. This stuff. Like, I am not that guy. I don't... Like, actually,
who cares if they were loved?
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I mean, that's in terms of, I was talking about that specific moment of this degenerate who's never loved anything in his life other than himself,
yeah. Yeah. Right?
Like, resorting to outright lying to people,
sure,
like
sure,
about his feelings for them, and everyone jumping on board to go and clap. Now here's the difference. I think if had Ashley Babbitt or any one of those chuds faced any kind of real resistance, they would have cowered 2 seconds, right? Like that would, like they would have run away in 2 seconds. Like those are not people who face down guns. They, like, those are Gazans, right? Like a Gazan person stands up to a cowardly Israeli sniper to 300-400 meters away who deprives them of their legs or of their knees, mm-hmm, right? Like, and they go anyways, knowing that could be a reality. The Fash correctly and justifiably presume that the cops are on their side, because guess what, the cops are on their side, right? But like, yeah, this was a moment of contradiction. Yes, like the Capitol scene was a contradiction among their own sort of settler elite, and the fact that they were let in to that place, like that's the scandal, you know what I mean? Like that's the fact that they were allowed. I mean, the U.S. is the world's most advanced police state. We all know this because we've experienced it. Our communities have experienced it directly, or we ourselves have experienced it directly.
I thought, like, we were the beacon on the hill, Sina.
Yeah. I mean, like, but like, that's the thing. Like, that you have to lie to yourself when you know what you are, right? Like,
right.
You don't,
right.
Like, indigenous people don't have to make up shit about themselves and their horrible history. You know why? Because it's not true. It's true. Like, it's all there for everybody to see, right? Like, they don't have to fictionalize, like, oh, our people came from this, that, or whatever. It's like, no, we're from here. This is where we're from. Like, this is also something funny for me. Like, I'm an Iranian. Like, I don't belong in Canada, right? But, like, the vicissitudes of history brought me, right? Like, it brought me to this point in history where I am a settler, where I am, you know, sort of doing the work of settling this country, this ongoing project, right? This thing, what I want to bring back here is that these people had nothing in their lives of value that spoke to them, right? Like, this is alienation that then congeals into and grabs onto the first thing that they can find, a first kind of community they can find, which is white racism. And then from there, it's hopeless, right? You can't, I mean, whatever. There are these reform people, whatever. You can get them back, sure, whatever, fine. But like, you've gone down a fascist route, and there's not much taking you, but like, you know, I don't know. It's there's a weird thing here of agency, the individual subject, what kind of political class do we create? But like, the thing about social media is that everybody gets their say, right? Like, everybody gets to dunk on the president. I get to re-quote tweet the president and call him, oh, Drumpf, ho, 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 right? Like, this is like one of the sort of things that the U.S. has, right, in terms of their freedom. Like, you can tell George Bush, go fuck yourself, pedo, right? Like, and police don't storm down your door. Now, mind you, police do storm down your door for shit like that. It's just you don't hear about it, and like, it's not that big of a deal. But like the fact that these people went out of their way to go to something as if it was like meaningful to them, you know, like, and of course it was meaningful to them, but the meaning of that is just like it's like the pus that comes out of like a, you know, like a, like some, you know, fucking like, what's it called? Like when you have like a splinter in your finger, right? Like that's what that was. It was just like a reaction to a deeper problem, which is alienation, which is people feeling disconnected from any kind of community. And it's not, we're not going to get to the roots of all this. Like that's complicated. That's not anything, but like, this is a product of American politics and the lack thereof that people can grab onto. So instead it gets all translated into this, you know, psychotic, absolutely devotion to this degenerate. I mean, I always joke this too, like, you should just get real religion. Just get real religion. You don't need Trump. Get a real God. You know? Like there are plenty of them to pick from. They got lots of history. You got all kinds of institutions. You can make any kinds of friends you want. Just pick one. Go be a Mormon. You know, like that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's like what you can do. But like, this guy was their God, you know, like
Mormonism isn't real.
It's like a purely fabricated imaginary community in and of itself, right? Like, I'm not here to defend Mormonism, but if you're going to call it a religion, call it religion.
And white settler Americans don't have a community,
yes,
by definition,
true,
because
yes,
they
exactly
don't belong here.
Yes.
Right? The only reason Yeah. And they can't ever. And this is like the existential crisis of like settler identity and settler ontology in America.
Bilingual or promote bilingualism in Canada? Look no further. Apply for the Odyssey or Explore program for the chance to improve your French or help young people improve their English. You'll immerse yourself in another region's language and culture, make new friends, and have experiences that will stay with you forever. Many people say the Odyssey and Explore programs have changed their lives. To find out more or to apply, visit EnglishFrench.ca. Programs funded by the Government of Canada.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.